Chapter 20. When the monster spread its wings to fly at them, Cloud could see its wingspan was nearly the equal of its length. Considering its body resembled a snake with wings, the length of it was hardly inconsiderable. Pedicid was more massive, but Cloud thought Evrei might be bigger. "How are we supposed to fight that thing?" Zack demanded, his voice strained with obvious fear. "Even if we could get close enough to hit it with a sword, I don't think it would make much of an impact. Can we outfly it?" Pedicid was already struggling to do just that, arcing into a dive that allowed him to trade height for speed, then pumping his wings when he was just a few body lengths above the city. He was going so fast it was hard to breathe, but when Cloud looked back over his shoulder, Evrei was gaining on them rapidly. Being lighter meant the worm could fly faster, and there was nothing they could do to slow it down.
"We'll have to use magic and the Aeons," Sephiroth shouted. "Cloud, focus on using your Aeon's breath attack whenever possible. It will do the most damage. But even between blasts, you should be able to draw on his ability to do black magic. I'll summon as well. Zack?"
"I'm not much use with black magic, but I know some status effect spells," Zack offered. "And I can make sure the two of you don't fall off the damn dragon." "Slow it down if you can," Cloud said. Mentally, he commanded Pedicid to turn again, bringing the dragon around to face the Wyrm. He felt power gathering around Sephiroth as well, and a moment later, the crash of thunder heralded the arrival of Jose's Aeon.
"Bina!"
Sephiroth cried out and gestured towards Evrei. Lightning gathered at the tip of Bina's horn, and Cloud thought he heard Zack mutter a curse just before the power crackled through the air between the Aeon and the Wyrm. Pedicid roared, and pure energy blasted from its mouth to join Bina's lightning. To Cloud's horror, Evrei simply writhed in midair, impossibly agile, and corkscrewed around the blast to dodge it.
"We need to flank it," Cloud said, and Sephiroth nodded.
Charging past them, Bina's hooves threw up tiny lightning bolts as they struck the seemingly solid air. Apparently, he could truly fly, after a fashion. Though, Cloud still thought Pedicid was the better choice to have carried them out of the temple. Two disks of power shot from the unicorn to Evrei, and this time the attack actually connected. Not well, just catching the tip of the worm's tail, but it was enough to make Evrei hiss and bait his wings. The hissing was more than just a sound, though. A cloud spewed forth from the worm's open mouth, and Cloud didn't like the look of it as it drifted through the air towards them.
"Why do I get the feeling we don't want to breathe that?" he said, even as he commanded Pedicid to dive beneath the vile-looking patch of air.
"Evrei's attacks can poison you, or even turn you to stone," Sephiroth replied. "If we do have the misfortune to fly into a cloud of it, try not to inhale. Thankfully, the farther it must travel through the air, the more the poison will disperse."
Despite everything, something about Sephiroth's words made Zack laugh. Who knew blitz training would come in handy for fighting giant flying snakes? "Don't know about you guys, but I can probably hold my breath longer than that thing can keep attacking." Almost too late, Cloud saw Evrei's tail whipping around towards Bina's legs. He shouted a warning. He didn't know whether it was Sephiroth who heard him or the Aeon himself, but Bina tried frantically to dodge. He managed to escape the worst of the damage, but the impact still sent him spinning through the sky, off balance and scrambling to keep from falling entirely. Taking advantage of Evrei's focus on Bina, Pedicid launched a quick series of devastating black magic attacks. At least, they would have been devastating if they had all connected. But after the first blast, Evrei once again managed to dodge the rest.
"We have to pin it down," Zack said. "Flanking isn't enough. It just dodges by going up and down."
"Unfortunately, we don't have a third summoner handy,"
Sephiroth replied. His long silver hair was blowing around them, alternately obscuring and uncovering his face. He looked unusually intent, even considering they were in the middle of a battle, his face strained and his green eyes shining brighter than usual. The reason why became obvious when Sephiroth snapped out the words to a Fyraga spell. At the same moment, Bina threw another lightning blast at Evrei. Cloud hastily ordered Petersid to cast another barrage of spells as well. This time, they managed to score a proper hit on Evrei, and the Wyrm screamed in agony. It wasn't enough to stop it, or even slow it much, unfortunately, but it did at least mean it was possible to hurt the damn thing. "Damn, Seph, you can split your attention enough to summon and cast at the same time?" Zack said, clearly amazed. "I didn't know that. Here I thought Cloud was the precocious one." "It would be somewhat easier if you weren't distracting me with chatter," Sephiroth pointed out, his voice rough. Petersid had to dodge to one side abruptly to keep them out of another poison cloud, and the older summoner nearly lost his grip on the dragon's back. Zack swore and lunged to grab at his belt, then clamped a hand on Cloud's belt for good measure. If it was possible to summon and cast at the same time, could Cloud do it? Even if he could, though, he'd barely started to learn the first of the black magic spells. Nothing he could cast would be strong enough to hurt Evrei. And anyway, what they needed was a third angle of attack, not just more power coming from one side. Could he summon more than one Aeon? He'd never heard of such a thing being done before, but it wouldn't be that different from splitting his attention to cast a spell as well, would it? Well, he'd apparently managed to do several other things that were impossible, simply because he hadn't known they couldn't be done. He'd never know unless he tried. Careful to keep part of his attention on his link with Petersid, the last thing they needed was for the dragon to dissolve beneath them and send them plummeting down to the ground far below. Cloud reached for the power of his other aeons. Ekia was unavailable, of course, but the other three pulsed eagerly within him. There was only one choice he could make, really. "Jamavan!" he shouted, and thrust his fist into the air, feeling like he needed the focus of the gesture and her name to help him accomplish the impossible. Power surged through him, pulling him in two directions at once, and for a horrible moment, Cloud thought it might literally tear him apart. He screamed, but in the end, it was the sky that tore itself open, not his skull. Bright light pierced the heavens as Besaid's Aeon came plummeting through, falling in a spiraling path that ended when she snapped her wings open to hover just behind and above Evrei. Now they had the third angle they needed to keep the Wyrm pinned between their attacks, unable to dodge. "Do it! Everything you've got!" Cloud shouted, and felt the power gathering in Petersid. "Seth, do you hear me? On three!" Sephiroth was sitting rigid, clutching at Petersid's scales, his wide eyes fixed on Jamavan with a shocked gaze. He didn't appear to hear Cloud's words at first, but Zack let go of his belt to smack him on the shoulder, and that appeared to jolt him back to reality. He glanced over at Cloud and nodded marginally. The effort of trying to remember how to do something even as simple as count to three while simultaneously summoning two aeons was beyond Cloud, but Zack seemed to understand, because he started the count. "One?" His voice held a note of command, like he was a blitz captain again and ordering his players to do their drills. "Two!" The power buildup was even worse than before, Cloud's mind straining to try to split his awareness between Petersid and Jamavan as they both charged their attacks, until it felt like he would surely go mad from it. It felt like ages passed, but finally Zack called the last number. "Three!" Bolts of pure energy shot out from Cloud's two aeons, and powerful lightning crackled from Bina. All three attacks converged on Evrei at once, and the great Wyrm had nowhere to go to escape. The blast made it scream in agony, a horrible whistling sound that Cloud thought would haunt him for the rest of his life. The sail-like wings were shredded, and Evrei twisted and clawed at nothing as it began to fall from the sky. Feeling sick, Cloud released Jamavan before the power could truly drive him insane. Or worse, make him pass out from the overload. He didn't know if Petersid would remain summoned if Cloud was unconscious, but he doubted it. Gasping for air, he coughed a little as he sprawled out over his remaining Aeon's back. He felt the tug on his belt as Zack kept him in place, and was grateful for his guardian's foresight.
"Get us out of here," Cloud croaked,
his voice as raw as if he'd been screaming through the whole final attack. Maybe he had been. Obediently, Peterson wheeled and headed away from the towers of Bavel, aiming towards a large, open area Cloud could just see in the distance that had to be the Calmlands. Cloud just let himself go limp, focusing on nothing but keeping Peterson solid beneath them now that the danger was past. He didn't want to look up, partly because he was afraid of losing his grip on Peterson, but mostly because he was afraid he would see that look on Sephiroth's and Zack's faces again. The odd, reverent one that made him feel like some kind of freak of nature, instead of just a person too stubborn and ignorant to realize the limits of what was possible. Zack's grip on him changed, going from clutching Cloud's belt to rubbing his back.
"That was amazing," his guardian said.
He sounded impressed, but not as worshipful as Cloud had been afraid of.
"It's just one thing after another with you, isn't it? And people said I was a prodigy."
"Indeed," Sephiroth agreed. His tone was a bit more deferential than Zack's, but not much. Cloud dared to lift his head a little, and saw Sephiroth regarding him with a smile that was almost rueful.
"Just when I think you cannot possibly surprise me any more, I begin to believe there may be nothing the Aeons won't do for you. And likewise, I begin to believe that everything we think we know about them may be wrong."
Sometimes it just takes someone who doesn't know something can't be done to prove that it can, Zack said, and shrugged. I mean, imagine how often the very first summoners must have heard, "It can't be done."
"Well, I'm glad I can impress you both, but I don't know how much longer I can keep us in the air," Cloud admitted with a grimace. "My head is pounding, and I feel like a squashed flan."
"You mean you're not invincible and infallible?" Zack teased him and patted his shoulder. "Good! I was starting to feel inadequate. Perfect people make me nervous. Put us on the ground, then. I can carry you for a while. I'd say you've more than earned a rest."
"What you've accomplished is already more than impressive enough," Sephiroth added. "It will take Bavel's forces some time to recover and organize themselves to come after us. With luck, we can be on Mount Gagazet before they manage it. No one but summoners and their guardians are permitted to set foot on the holy road over Gagazet. The Ronso ensure it. Even the Crusaders won't be able to pursue us past that point."
Wearily, Cloud struggled to see through Peterson's eyes, since he didn't want to lean over far enough to get a good look at the ground through his own. The dragon's vision was distorted and strange, but after a few minutes of struggle, Cloud realized he simply needed to tell the Aeon to find a good place in the Calmlands to set them down, and Peterson could find his own landing point. Perhaps the Aeon decided to take pity on them, because instead of diving, he spiraled slowly down out of the sky, coming to a landing so gentle, Cloud wasn't even certain they'd actually touch down for a moment. Sephiroth slid down first, followed quickly by Zack, and then they both reached up to help Cloud down as well. For once, Cloud's pride decided to shut the hell up and just let him accept the help. He was exhausted and had a splitting headache, and every limb was trembling with the aftermath of fear, and perhaps with the effects of hunger and deprivation, he realized, as the world spun dizzily around him, and Zack had to catch him around the shoulders to keep him from collapsing completely. The headache eased slightly as Peterson dissolved into pyreflies, and that was the only thing that let Cloud stay on his feet.
"Didn't they feed you at all?"
Zack demanded, shifting around until Cloud was draped over his back. Cloud's feet dangled halfway to the ground, and he felt ridiculous getting a ride like a little child, but he had to admit it was pretty much the only way he was going anywhere right now.
"Bread and water," he murmured,
as Sephiroth headed for the crest of the hill they'd landed next to, and Zack set out after him.
"Which is more than we have with us now."
"We also don't have any armor or potions,
And these ceremonial swords we grabbed from the guards honestly aren't worth the metal they're made from, Zack said, grimacing as he hefted his stolen weapon to study it closer. These are gonna break the first time we try to hit something with a tough hide. If the fiends attack, for the moment, my magic and aeons should be more than enough to handle them. Sephiroth interrupted him. It seems they cared for us rather better than Cloud, and after a week's rest, I'm at full strength. The fight with Evre was tiring, but I'm far from exhausted.
Good, because I think it's gonna be all I can do to carry him, Zack said. Not like I'm all that great in a fight without a decent sword anyway. Or at least a blitz ball to slam at the enemy.
Anjael, his voice caught on the name, and Cloud winced. After a moment, Zack cleared his throat and forced himself to keep going.
Anjael said something about getting supplies?
I have the gill he provided for us, Sephiroth said. If they haven't been chased off or rounded up already, there should be an Albed supply station near the edge of the Calmlands that we can purchase equipment at.
I swear, if we run into Rin again, I'm gonna shake him down for the magic teleporter he's obviously got hidden somewhere, Zack joked, in an obvious attempt to lighten the mood.
Cloud wasn't sure where exactly in the Calmlands they'd landed, but he was pretty sure it was closer to Bevel than Gagazet. That meant they still had a lot of ground to cover, and they had to do it before the Chocobo Knights caught up to them.
Maybe we should stay in the foothills, off the main path, he suggested.
Not a bad thought, if you're confident of your ability to navigate, Sephiroth agreed. I don't know this area well enough, unfortunately. It's far too easy to get lost in the Badlands around the plateau of the Calmlands.
I need to see some kind of reference point to get my bearings, but then I should be able to get us to Gagazet without much trouble, Cloud said. I couldn't see properly from Pirasid's back, but I know the mountains around here like the back of my hand.
If I'm not mistaken, we should be able to get a decent view of this area of the Calmlands once we come around the next hill, Sephiroth assured him. I know how to get to the way station, and from there you can take over.
I suppose we're not going to have time to let him rest properly if we want to stay ahead of the Crusaders, Zack sighed. I swear, kid, it's like herding fish trying to take care of you sometimes.
It's not like I'm trying to make it difficult on purpose, Cloud protested weakly.
Hey, I can rest when I'm dead, right?
He'd meant it to be a joke, but the words hung heavy in the air between them. Not only was it rubbing salt in the wound so soon after Anjael's sacrifice, it was a reminder that every step took them closer to Cloud's death.
Assuming you actually live long enough to get to Xanarkand, Zack finally retorted, with obviously exaggerated irritation. Between the Aeons and the Crusaders, some days I'm not sure what's going to kill you first. Strangely enough, the fiends are a distant third in the odds.
Only because I have such good guardians, Cloud said, and he might have hugged Zack a little tighter than was strictly necessary to keep himself in place on the older man's back. And that sums up the relationship of every summoner with his or her guardians, Sephiroth said, a smile quirking at his lips. As they skirted around the foothill that was blocking their view, the great grassy plain of the Calmlands came slowly into view.
Damn, it's like a green ocean, Zack exclaimed with a low whistle, as the true scope of it became apparent. It just goes on forever.
Part of that is illusion, Sephiroth said, his voice taking on a faintly lecturing tone. The plains are much longer than they are wide, but the great chasm at the far edge makes it appear far more vast than it truly is. Standing at the edge of it, seeing the massive scars left behind on the world, is the only real way to appreciate the enormity of sin. The battle between it and Lady Unalaska's final aeon.
Abruptly, Sephiroth stopped walking, and his voice trailed off at the same moment. He stared out over the plains with a shocked, haunted expression. "Seth," Zack said, picking up his pace a little to come alongside. "Are you... Sweet faith, what is that?" The hill fell away and became a cliff instead, letting them see the southern edge of the plain for the first time. Spread out over the ground like a creeping cancer was a dark blotch. From this distance, it resembled an enormous ant colony, with tiny figures scurrying about everywhere. It was the flash of light off polished armor from the figures around the edges that finally let Cloud realize what he was seeing. "The Albed," he whispered, aghast. "It's all the Albed they've rounded up. This is the camp they're taking them to. They're being held prisoner." "I didn't think there were that many Albed in all of Spira," Zack said, clearly disbelieving. "Even if they'd grabbed every blonde Spearin who might have a drop of Albed blood, there's no way there could be so many of them."
"Home," Sephiroth said grimly. "The Crusaders have found home."
"Huh? Your home is in Bavel, isn't it?" Zack said. "I don't think the Crusaders ever lost it, Seth."
"Not his home," Cloud corrected him miserably.
"Just home. The Albed City. Seth's right. That's the only way they'd have found so many. I wonder if there's anything left, or if they destroyed it after they cleared it out so nobody else would be able to hide there."
He felt numb, in shock as if he'd suffered a wound, and his heart ached. All his life, his mother had told him stories about the fabled Albed City, where she'd lived before she'd come to Nibelheim with his father. It was the secret place the Albed had built for themselves, so that the people without a country could have a home to call their own at last. And no outsiders were ever permitted to know about it, let alone see it. She'd always promised him to take him to see it one day, when the time was right. When he was just a little older, when they had enough gil to spare. He'd regretted the fact that becoming a summoner meant he would never have a chance to travel there, but from the looks of it, there probably wasn't much left to see.
"I didn't even know the Albed had a city," Zack said, frowning. "I mean, isn't that their whole thing? That they don't have a homeland?"
"That's what they want people to believe, so nobody will hunt down their home and destroy it again," Cloud replied. "At least, that's what Cece always told me. How do you know about it?" he asked Sephiroth.
"After all of Yevon's followers rejected me, it was the Albed who took me in and made me feel worth something again," Sephiroth said softly, and the pain in his voice as he looked out over the internment camp was clear. "Rin knew me from my journey, and he vouched for me. He said that I was every bit as much a man without a home as the Albed, and so home was where I belonged. I lived there for nearly 5 years.
Now Cloud remembered that Sephiroth had mentioned spending years among the Albed before. Cloud had assumed it was on a ship, because he'd thought they wouldn't tell even Sephiroth about home. But apparently he'd been wrong. Then again, given the Albed attitude toward the way Spearins didn't value the lives of their summoners, Cloud could totally understand why they would take in a failed summoner who'd lost his faith in Yevon.
"There's no way an Albed way station is still operating, not under these circumstances," Zack said, and grimaced. "It's possible the Crusaders would have taken it over or given it to Spearin merchants. The summoners still have to cross the Calmlands, and they'll still need supplies. But if we go down there, we'll be grabbed faster than you can say, 'Let's blitz.'"
The view of the plains had at least given Cloud the opportunity to get his bearings. "We're not that far from Nibelheim," he realized. "If we can make it there, we can get supplies. It's so off the beaten path, it's entirely possible the anti-Albed sentiment hasn't spread there." He paused to consider that for a moment, then sighed.
"At least, not more than was already there to start with. It might be smart for Sephiroth to pretend to be the summoner, just this once."
"Much as I like lying or denying you the respect you're due, I think perhaps in this case I agree,"
Sephiroth nodded. Though I hope you're planning to tell your mother the truth. Assuming she's even still there, with all this going on, Cloud muttered, looking back at the cancerous sprawl of the camp. Well, there's only one way to find out, Zack said, and hefted Cloud a little higher on his back. The sooner we get going, the sooner we'll arrive. I want food, weapons, and warmer clothes before we go much further. He shivered, hard enough to make Cloud's teeth rattle. Not necessarily in that order. As Cloud had said, Nibelheim wasn't far from their landing point. As the fiend flew, on foot, trekking through the mountain passes with no equipment, no supplies, and entirely the wrong clothing, it might as well have been on the other side of the world. Zack and Sephiroth traded off carrying Cloud, and after a while he insisted he was well enough to be able to walk on his own. The worst of the headache had faded, which left him much steadier on his feet. The sharp scents of pine and snow on the breeze that blew through the mountains helped as well, clearing his mind and feeling comfortably familiar. He'd come home at last. This was where he belonged, in a place where every inch of the skyline was unique and memorable, and every step he took upwards seemed to drop the temperature another degree. The same brisk air and clean scents that comforted Cloud were making Zack utterly miserable, of course, and Cloud felt a little bad about that. Sephiroth finally shrugged out of his outer robe and offered it to Zack, and the Islander took it without even a single joke, so Cloud knew it was bad. Hopefully they would be able to get some warmer clothes at Nibelheim, or there was no way they'd make it over the frozen slopes of Gagazet alive. Finally, the green scent of the air changed subtly, and Cloud veered over to the edge of the path. Aha! He exclaimed, spotting what he was after. The unmistakable spiky leaves nearly hidden by an evergreen bush at the side of the trail. Geishel greens? Zack said incredulously. You know those aren't edible for humans, right? Or are you feeling seasick all of a sudden?
They can be used to lure and tame wild chocobo,
Sephiroth said, some of the grim weight seeming to lift from him. We've been seeing tracks of them throughout the area, but I didn't realize the greens would grow so high in the mountains. Not naturally, but the traders who use these trails plant them all along the route, Cloud explained, gathering as much as he could find. The paths are so steep and dangerous, especially at certain times of the year, they often lose a pack bird to lameness or even have one go over the edge. This way, they can lure another if they need to.
Smart, Zack said, and bent to help him gather the greens. Hope you know how to tame one into taking a rider without a saddle, though. I might be able to steer a ship in a pinch, but I can count the number of birds I've ridden on the fingers of one hand.
It took them the better part of an hour to lure in and tame three birds, Sephiroth using some kind of magic to calm them, though Cloud didn't recognize the spell at all. The wild birds remained restive, shifting from foot to foot and occasionally flapping their wings, but they finally allowed the three humans to climb onto their backs, with makeshift reins woven of vines. Riding a chocobo bareback turned out to be an experience in agony. Cloud hoped fervently it was one he'd never need to repeat. The bouncing motion of a running bird was bad enough, even with a padded saddle to cushion the jouncing blows. Without that buffer, each step the bird took lifted Cloud off its back and slammed him back down again, his tailbone impacting with the bird's bony spine each time. Still, the time they saved was more than worth it, as was the fact that the birds had no difficulty on the rough trails. Fiends tried to attack them a few times, but the chocobos were so fast and agile, they had no difficulty avoiding the encounters. They climbed higher and higher, until Zack and Sephiroth were both panting hard in the thin air. "Try to keep your breathing even, but deeper and faster," Cloud called out to them, his words broken up by the stride of the chocobo. Even he was having a little trouble, his body having apparently adjusted somewhat to the much richer air closer to sea level. His mother had told him stories many times of how sick she'd been when she'd first come to his father's hometown, a combination of her pregnancy with Cloud and the mountain air. He hoped it wouldn't hit Sephiroth or Zack nearly that hard. At last, they crested yet another ridge, and Nibelheim came into view ahead of them. It was a tiny hamlet, just a collection of houses tucked into a small mountain valley next to a glacier-fed lake. From a distance, it looked picturesque and perfect, right on the edge of the snow line, the chimneys of the houses sending thin columns of smoke drifting into the air. Every so often, the wind would blow the smoke towards them, and the scent of burning cedar and pine made Cloud breathe a little deeper, trying to draw it in. There was almost no sign of the fire that had devastated the town years ago. The houses had all been rebuilt, the burned foundations and trees cleared away, until only someone who really knew what they were looking for would notice that the cleared area around the village was wider than it needed to be, and the trees at the edge of the forest much smaller and younger than the rest of the growth. "The general store isn't much, but it's better than nothing," Cloud called to his companions. "If we're lucky, they'll have gone on a supply run recently. The mountain passes are wide open at this time of year, so they usually make the trip pretty frequently. Even if they haven't, they'll still have plenty of staples like journey bread, and there's not much call for swords and such up here, so they tend to sit on the shelves." "Which one is your house?" Zack asked curiously. Cloud pointed, and was a little dismayed to realize there was no sign of smoke rising from the chimney. "Well, there could be a lot of innocent reasons for that. It was late spring, and while the air felt cold to Cloud, that was probably just because he'd started to get used to the warmer weather of the lowlands. After Kilika's impossible heat, just about anything would feel cold by comparison. Maybe his mother was simply warm enough not to need a fire." It didn't have to mean the Crusaders had come and dragged her away from their home. Cloud decided he was going to continue to believe the best until proven otherwise. A few people recognized him as they rode in. One or two even called out in surprise. He nodded and greeted the friendly ones by name, but no one approached closely. Probably because they were all trying to figure out why he'd come back, and who the two people with him were. Well, they would all find out soon enough. Though Cloud was quietly grateful, Sephiroth had agreed to pretend to be their summoner. Even though it meant that Cloud wouldn't be able to rub his status as a summoner into all their faces the way he'd always wanted to. Right now, they just didn't need the problems that would stir up. Besides, being a guardian was still a pretty prestigious position, especially if anybody recognized Sephiroth or Zack. Cloud smiled a little to himself, awed all over again by the company he kept these days. Nobody stopped them as they passed through the main part of the village, and stopped the chocobo just outside his house. "There's a rail we can tie them to," Cloud said, swinging his leg over the bird's back and dropping to the ground, trying not to wince as his rubbed raw thighs protested. "We'll be able to get saddles at the store if we have enough extra gil. Though it might not be worth it. We can't take the birds over Gagazet. They'd freeze before they got halfway up. So we'll have to let them go at the base anyway." "My ass is pretty sure it's worth the gil, even for a short trip," Zack said dryly. And Cloud thought he heard Sephiroth cough in a way that sounded like he was covering a laugh. Cloud fussed over tying his bird up, trying to make sure it had enough length to be able to graze a bit on the evergreen bushes around the house, while not being so long that the bird might tangle itself up. Finally, he had to admit he was stalling, and he heaved a sigh and led the way to his front door. He hesitated at the threshold, not sure if he should knock and wait for his mother to answer, or just go right in. It wasn't as if his mother was expecting him back, and if she had seen him coming up the road, she'd be outside already, so he didn't want to shock her. At the same time, it seemed just wrong to knock on his own door like a stranger. "Hey," Zack said, putting a supportive hand on his shoulder. "It's all right, kid. You can do this." Sephiroth said nothing, but when Cloud glanced at the older man over his shoulder, Sephiroth nodded solemnly at him. Squaring his shoulders, Cloud decided to compromise. He knocked twice on the door, but then immediately opened it and stepped through. "Cece?" he called,
grateful when his voice didn't waver. Cece, I'm home!